Well, I just want to spend a few moments just looking at this passage in Kings. Have you ever felt insignificant, overlooked, pushed aside, ignored, especially when you have entered a new setting? It may have been in an earlier part of your career when you moved to a new school, a new department. You perhaps were navigating government departments. Maybe now at this stage in your life, you're trying to downsize or even find an appropriate aged care facility. Your circumstances have changed and you are unknown. How do you respond? What resources do you have to adjust, to adapt to your new setting? So our passage today offers some insights on how to respond to the changing circumstances of life. The key characters in the passage are men. However, a young girl, a captive, plays a significant part in this account. She has no name, but her bravery, faith, and connection with her community is crucial to the healing of Naaman and his understanding of Israel's God. Our story begins with Naaman, a Syrian army commander, and ends with his interaction with the prophet Elisha. Elisha was a prophet for the northern kingdom of Israel in the 9th century BCE. The passing of the mantle of Elijah to Elisha we find in 1 Kings 19. Sadly, the northern kingdom was set on a path of idolatry by Jeroboam and the prophets, and that particularly Elijah and Elisha spoke out against that idolatry and polytheism of the kings and the people. We read in those first couple of verses that Naaman was a very effective commander. He was involved in raids upon Israel and Judah. In fact, we can read about some of those raids in 2 Chronicles chapter 24, where the leaders of Judah were killed and the plunder was sent back to the king in Damascus. But Naaman was very effective. And not only was involved in raids against Israel and Judah, but in neighbouring countries. But of course, as in all states in those days and today, whatever the era, the commander of the army is an important and prominent person. And in unstable societies, the army commander often holds the key to power as whoever he supports rules. He was a valuable member of the King of Syria's executive. He was highly regarded, courageous, but interestingly, note his victories are attributed to the Lord, revealing that God's power was not just restricted to Israel and Judah. And that's something I suppose we need to hold on to today as we grapple with the understanding of conflicts in the world that we face today, that God is in control. I often recall the passages where Cyrus, the Persian king, is referred to as the anointed one and as a shepherd, and yet he's not a person who belonged to the Jewish or the Israeli community. However, poor old Naaman, however, despite all his prowess, he was suffering from an incurable skin disease which the Bible identifies as leprosy. An insight into the character of Naaman can be seen that his wife's maid, a young Israelite girl captured during one of those raids into Israel, comments to her mistress that her master should go to the prophet Elisha for a cure for his leprosy. Now, there is no hint of bitterness in her remarks. Apparently, it would seem that she was well treated and was concerned for the well-being of her master. A measure of the desperation of Naaman can be seen that he undoubtedly, at the urgings of his wife, decides to visit the holy man Elisha. Despite him being an Israelite, Naaman follows the necessary protocol by first gaining permission from his master, the king. Now, it wouldn't do for the military commander to suddenly make a visit to a neighbouring country, especially after a military incursion. So the king of Syria grants Naaman permission, but he follows the international protocol of the day by sending Naaman to the king of Israel with an accompanying letter and expensive gifts for the king. The king, of Israel reacts abruptly, tears his robe. He interprets this as the commencement of another international quarrel. Now, obviously, the response of the king indicates that his faith in God was probably non-existent, and his relationship with Elisha the prophet was very poor. However, Elisha hears of the king's consternation at the letter he has received, and he instructs him to send Naam to him so that he will know there is truly a prophet in Israel. Naaman, with his grand entourage of chariots and attendants, proceeds to the house of the prophet. Elisha does not even emerge from his house to greet this powerful, important international guest, but only sends a messenger with the instructions that Naaman should go and wash 7 times in the River Jordan for his healing. Naaman is furious. He is accustomed to the pomp of royal palaces. Have you noticed the pomp surrounding current leaders when they emerge and are welcomed when visiting countries? There are military parades, lavish dinners, even sometimes aircraft are given to them. There is a lot of pomp and pageantry. He's furious and he's insulted. He then compares the rivers of Damascus with the Jordan River. Finally, he responds positively to the suggestions of his servants. It's interesting, you know, this tells you something about the character of Naaman. He is not only respected by the king of Syria, but also by his servants. So he bathes in the Jordan River and is healed. Now, to the maid of Naaman's wife, all this international diplomatic kerfuffle started with the testimony of a powerless young Israelite girl. It is amazing sometimes of the impact of the genuine genuine testimony of a believer. So briefly, what can we learn from her life? And there's just 3 things I'd like to mention. 1, she was brave. She observed the plight of her master. She listened. She gained the confidence of Naaman's wife. And I suspect she was hardworking, conscientious and diligent. Now, it is interesting, as I read this story, I thought to myself, I wonder whether the house help that we had in Bangladesh or even India would have suggested to my wife, Gillian, that I should go to a doctor if I was ill. The power imbalance would not have allowed for that. So I find her comment to the mistress quite remarkable, in fact, breathtaking. So she was brave. She belonged to a community. She was aware of her history and the role of prophets. Even though she was in a foreign country, she knew something of her past. She knew where the prophet lived. Thirdly, she had a living faith. She believed that God was able to cure her master. In the midst of a foreign country, surrounded by idols, pomp and ceremony, and of living in a commander's house, she retained a trust and confidence in the God of her ancestors. As a result of her witness, Naaman comes to the conclusion after his healing that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. So a final comment. Naaman was healed. He was a new believer. He acknowledged his faith in the God of Israel. However, he needed to return to his family and to his significant social responsibilities. If he had returned to Syria, proclaiming that he did not believe in the gods of Syria, but believed in the God of Syria's enemies, he would not have stimulated an interesting religious dialogue in his family or community, nor would he have been quietly retired from his post. He and his family probably would have been killed. There was no place to which he could flee. His decision had implications for his family and friends. Now, it's interesting. One of the significant duties of the military commander of Syria was to accompany the king of Syria when he entered into the temple of the god Rimmon of Syria. He faced a dilemma. He had declared that he would never again offer burnt offerings and sacrifices to any other god but the Lord, the God of Israel. So what would he do? There was a problem. So when the king of Syria is leaning on the arm of Naaman and bowing down to Rimmon, Naaman would have to bow down as well. So he asks for advice from the prophet. Naaman's final request is to ask Elisha to grant the Lord's pardon for this act. Elisha's answer is very instructive. We in the West like a direct answer. Yes or no. Black or white. This is my nose, we say in the West. But this is my nose, we might say somewhere else. In fact, often I was asked, was your marriage a love marriage? What was my answer? I did ask for my father-in-law's permission. So what does this mean for Naaman? It means you make up your own mind. You are the one who lives in that context. Your religious, family, community situation is important, and you need to retain those relationships. Naaman was clear in his faith, but he had to express that in a way that was culturally acceptable and appropriate. So when we give advice or make suggestions to new believers on how to live, we need to be careful. Where does that leave us? Well, there we have the military commander of Naaman. And finally, when the circumstances of life throw curveballs, when we find ourselves in strange and often bewildering settings, maybe our health is compromised, relationships are fractured, what can sustain us? Trust. Trust in God, who is our refuge and strength. And remember, like the young girl, be bold. But remember that our words must be backed with a life that commends the good news. We need also to retain the support of a caring community and individuals that have walked with us over the years and have shared experiences with us. And they can encourage us in those situations. And above all, we need to have confidence in the power of God, who loves and cares for us. The young girl, captured, living in a hostile environment, shared her faith that transformed the life of her master. I doubt whether she would have expressed her views in the first few weeks of her internment. She gave good advice in a new situation, but sometimes that takes time. So we need to listen, to observe, and to pray for wisdom when we are thrust into new situations. Finally, a note of caution. Our culture is susceptible to showing favoritism to the wealthy, the powerful, and the impressive. But those who have grasped the wonder and beauty of Christ's love for the insignificant, the poor, and powerless ought to look different. Once we understand Christ's place above all things and start to see the world with that perspective, making distinctions based on status or anything else becomes facile and a betrayal of Jesus and his place in our lives. At times, we may feel insignificant and believe that to overcome our inadequacies, we need to align ourselves with the powerful. But that is not the kingdom way. Take heart. A simple gesture, a comment, even to the powerful, can have a profound impact, and we may never know the outcome of our witness. So finally, let's remain. We need to know when to speak. We need to know how God has worked in the past and have confidence that God is at work in our lives. And finally, the last slide. Today we did pray for peace in our world. But we do need also to pray particularly for people who come to faith who live in different religious settings. And finally, remember, God is able to do far more and abundantly beyond all that we ask or think. May we be bearers of peace and hope in our troubled world. Pray especially for those who come to know Jesus and live in countries, communities, families that are hostile and indifferent to the people of faith. The challenge to live for Jesus in those settings and retain those relationships is not easy. Let's continue to pray.